The Business Buzz Podcast. The Business Buzz.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Business Buzz for your weekly dose of business, finance and economics news right here on Vow FM, that's Voice of Wits 88.1. We're broadcasting live from our studios right here in Braamfontein, Johannesburg, and we're going to be taking you for the next hour or so. My name is Mudiwa Mob Justice Gabaza and I'll be your host. Now, who's to say that the world of business can't be entertaining? Definitely make sure you hold on to your seats as we seek to unpack and keep you entertained, educated and intrigued about the world of business. Now for today we are talking about the IMF loan that was approved last week. So basically the International Monetary Fund, or the IMF, is an organization with about 189 countries working to foster global monetary cooperation, secure financial stability, facilitate international trade, promote high employment and sustain economic growth and reduce poverty around the world. Now, the IMF recently approved a loan to help South Africa with the fight against COVID-19. And our question for today is, what does that actually mean? First, in terms of our relationship with international funders, and then secondly, how does that affect ordinary South Africans? And to help us unpack and navigate the topic, we are joined by Prof. Keith Breckenridge, who is a professor and deputy director at the Wits Institute for Social and Economic Research, and he's going to be talking to us about the loan and what its possible conditions could mean. And then we talk to our resident financial expert, that is Ken Swettenham. We normally have him on our business wrap-up for today. He's going to be helping us to understand how some of these loans and international funding actually affect the lives of ordinary South Africans, if at all. Now, coming up for the next hour, apart from that discussion around the loans, we're going to be getting into the business wrap. That's a part of the show where we give you a roundup of the week's top trending business and economics news, and we're also going to be getting into the Buffalo Index, where we tell you the state of your 100 rand. So that's how the show is looking like. Remember that you can join in the conversation on social media. On Facebook, we are Vow FM, that's Voice of Wits. You can also find our the Facebook page, that is the Wits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VFM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. You can also stream the station live on VFM.co.za, and remember that podcasts of the Business Buzz show are available on iono.fm, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and also on Spotify. And then all our other great content, you can find it on wits.journalism.co.za/business. So don't turn that dial. We are here for the next hour. That's how the show is going to be looking like. So keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
Mob Justice on the Business Buzz.
It's time for us to get into the week's top trending business and economics news. And for today, we just start off with the fact that SA business leaders are growing increasingly concerned that the government doesn't have the will or capacity to overcome the economic devastation wrought by the coronavirus pandemic. Business for South Africa, or B4SA, actually expects the economy to contract by as much as 10% this year, and has spent the past 4 months drafting a plan to get it back on track. About 250 experts worked for free on the proposals that could potentially add 1 trillion rand to GDP, but they gained limited traction with the authorities so far. B4SA's plan actually calls for the government to fulfill long-standing pledges to make it easier to do business, clamp down on graft, and overhaul badly managed state-owned enterprises. The group actually opposes tinkering with the Reserve Bank's mandate and threats to its independence and dictating pension funds on how to invest. Definitely want to keep an eye on, especially when you see what's going on with private sector players trying to play a bigger role in the economy, and we hope that the government is going to be doing their bit to take on some of these suggestions. And then we move on to the fact that South Africa's recovery from the coronavirus pandemic and the lockdown restrictions implemented to help, curb that spread with the state will unlikely to meet the ambitious targets it has set for itself because it's already got weak finances. This is what APSA South Africa's macroeconomics team is saying, because it expects that the budget deficit will reach 16.6% of GDP as revenues crater due to shrinking economic growth and as the state struggles to deliver on the extensive cuts to spending, notably wages, promised in February's national budget. APSA's forecast is higher than the 14.6% that Finance Minister Tito Mboweni announced for the main budget deficit in the special supplementary budget. Mboweni also outlined an additional 230 billion rand in spending cuts over the next 2 years, on top of the 160 billion rand in cuts to public service pay that were announced in February. But the pay reductions face fierce resistance, with public sector unions taking legal actions over the state's refusal to implement the final round of wage increases promised for the most recent multi-year wage agreement. These were supposed to actually come into effect in April. And then just moving on to what's been going on in the vehicle car sales, and it seems that some data has come out from the body that's in charge of vehicle sales, and basically they're showing that the July 2020 new passenger car market actually registered a substantial decline of 35.8% to about 18,900 vehicles sold, compared to 29,400 new vehicles sold in the same month last year. The contribution of the car rental industry only comprised about 1.4% in July of that. And then at the same time, we saw that vehicle exports for July 2020 recorded a decline of almost 30% compared to the same period last year. And then finally, it seems that the International Monetary Fund actually expects South Africa to provide quarterly reports on its COVID-19 support programs to individuals and companies, as well as regular reports on progress of its plans to stabilize debt and promote growth through structural reforms. So says the IMF's resident representative, that's Montford Mlachila, this past week. He was speaking on a webinar that was actually organized by the asset manager that is 91. South Africa received the IMF loan. That's the main topic of today's show. And they're actually saying that the loan money will be monitored through periodic reports and the publication of all contracts, including the beneficial owners and companies involved by the National Treasury. It is also required that COVID-19 spending be audited. As the institution does not have an investigative capacity, it will rely on the general public, the media, and civil society organizations to ensure that good governance is taken care of. So that's what the news is looking like in terms of the economy. On that last one around that IMF loan, we're going to be delving deeper into it when we get into our main topic. So definitely make sure you keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
More justice on the Business Buzz. The Buffalo Index on the Business Buzz.
We now switch over to the state of your 100 Rand in our Buffalo Index. That's what we tell you, what 100 Rand can do for you. And for today, because we have the IMF loan in focus, and some of the things that we do know about is that it's 4.3 billion US dollars, which translates to about 70 billion Rand, and that interest rates are likely to be sitting at around 1%, because, you know, that's what's going on in Western countries, particularly particularly the US, and also because this is said to be aid, so interest rates are relatively low. But he wanted to check what would happen in normal markets using prevailing interest rates. If you invested 100 rand in a fixed deposit account, what it would amount to. So at different intervals, if you invested a buffalo or 100 rand in a fixed deposit account for 18 months at 7% interest, you would earn 10 rand over that period. If you took the same amount of money and deposited for 12 months now, that's a year, at the same 7% interest rate, you would earn just 7 rand. At 6 months at the same interest rate of 7%, that would earn you about 3 rand. But if you decided to go the long way and decided that you're going to stick it out and be a proper long-term investor planning for your future, 100 rand over 60 months or 5 years at 7% interest rate would earn you about 35 rand. So that's what the state of your 100 rand is looking like if you are looking to grow your money or to see what's going on, because basically you earn money because the banks take people's deposits, lend it out to other people who then pay back that money at a premium called an interest rate, and some of that money is shared out amongst people that would have deposited in these accounts. So that's what your buffalo is looking like. On the other side of this, we tell you what a loan the size of 70 billion rand actually means for the South African economy.
The Buffalo Index on the Business Buzz. You're tuned in to the Business Buzz.
Welcome back to the Business Buzz, and for today we are talking about, you know, one of the things that's happened recently, and that was the approval of a 70 billion rand loan that came from the International Monetary Fund. This was approved this past week for South Africa to help the country manage the immediate consequences of the fallout of the COVID-19 crisis. So today we're going to be looking into some of the pros, cons, and conditions that are actually attached to the loan, what it means for the country, and you know, later on, what does it actually mean for you and I, if anything at all. And before we get into it, remember that you can engage with us on Facebook. We are Vow FM, that's Voice of Wits. You can also find our other Facebook page, that is Wits Radio Academy, and then on Twitter we're at Vow FM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. So to get you know, a sense of what's going on, some might call this the political perspective, some might call this the macro perspective, but we just want to talk to Professor Keith Breckenridge, who is the Deputy Director of the Wits Institute for Social and Economic Research, about what some of these issues mean. Prof, greetings to you.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody. It's very nice to have this opportunity to speak to you.
No. Thank you so much for joining us. I think a good point of departure for us is, you know, in terms of setting the scene, is what has actually been, you know, I guess Africa or South Africa's history with, you know, institutions like the IMF. Has it been a good one or a bad one from what you know?
So there are two distinct stories. There's lots of we could talk about it. The first one is obviously the history of structural adjustments, and almost all African economies, in some ways even the South African economy, were subject to conditional loans in the early 1980s, which were really very onerous, and I think most people would accept destroyed state capacity and social welfare. Almost, you know, it's hard to name an African country that didn't experience this, perhaps Ethiopia, because it was going through such a terrible time anyway. So there's this history of structural adjustment, conditional loans that were really about reducing the burden of the fiscus, and Zambia is a case study of this very extreme, difficult time. Where life was so hard that people who lived in the cities were basically forced to leave the cities and go back to the countryside. And of course, much of this happened while the ANC was actually resident in Zambia. So when the ANC took power in South Africa, the second part of the story was really a determined effort to avoid a situation where the South African economy would be dependent on the IMF and the fear in the ANC in particular about the loss of sovereignty that comes with these, you know, they're actually very good deals. They look good when you first get them, but they come with the loss of control really over the economy. So the South African finance minister, you know, this is a whole group of people. I think it's fair to say that it's Thabo Mbeki in particular who got a really strong grip on the economy to the point where by about 2009, just about the point where the Zuma administration comes in, the South African government is borrowing very little. And it's really in a position basically to do what it wants in the economy. It could have done much more borrowing in that period, but by 2009 it had completely freed itself. So the third part of the story is the massive expansion of government borrowing from the local bond market in rands between 2008 and where we stand now, so that we are now drowning in debt. Not worse than other people, there are lots of other economies that are in this position, but the really striking thing is how much the state requires the bond market to work now and how independent it was a decade ago.
I think then that can sort of prompt that question around the sovereignty that you spoke about just now. Is the fear about, you know, sovereignty, or is the fear just about having someone else sort of checking what the government is actually doing? Would you say that's one of the reasons why we've tended to borrow more domestically, that in terms of, you know, sanctioning the country, or, you know, just in terms of repercussions, you'd rather be indebted to someone locally as opposed to an international body that might tarnish your image internationally?
The dependence on the local bond market, what we call the RAND bond market, is really it's a key instrument of the last 20 years of the apartheid state. So this was a series of reforms, basically, we mostly associate with Stolz, who became eventually the Reserve Bank governor after 94. So that using the local bond market as a way of funding the state is something that the apartheid state was forced to do because it, after 85, couldn't really borrow overseas. The ANC inherited that instrument, very powerful instrument. Almost all African countries are trying to push towards building their own domestic bond markets, which, you know, basically can issue debt in the local currency. So sovereignty is part of it. It's important to be aware that it was the local borrowing that was also very heavily reduced in the first 15 years, between 95 and 2010. The Mbeki government reduced its dependence on the local bond market. And, of course, one of the things you've got to be careful about is that a lot of the people buying in the local bond market are international banks. So it's rand denominated, but the sovereignty issue is really about borrowing more than it is about the currency. Currency acts as a kind of buffer. It's a slight protection, but it's not really a protection. If you have to go back to the bond market, it doesn't really matter what currency you're borrowing. If you've got to borrow from JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs, it's, you know, the real issue is the interest rate rather than the currency.
So what do you make of the IMF's rapid financing instrument? Despite some of the stringent conditions that are usually attached to some of these loans, the IMF itself has actually argued, that this is a different, type of loan. What do you make of it?
Yeah, well, I think there are many things you can say. The first one is that it's a very low interest loan. So we're borrowing in dollars on the dollar bond market. So that means we're borrowing at about 1.5%. If you borrow in rands, you pay, basically rand interest rates are much closer to 10%. So it's cheap money if the currency doesn't collapse. And that's one of the things the Treasury has in mind. The real question is, what will happen once COVID is over? And I think there are many worries within in the Treasury about essentially our ability to. The estimate is that we're about $5 billion short of where we need to be in terms of the obligations that the state has offshore, in other words, foreign debt. We don't have no foreign debt. We have quite a lot of foreign debt, and, of course, we have a whole lot of imports we have to pay for. So this gives us some dollars that will help cushion when the crisis comes after COVID is, you know, more or less packed up. In other words, the damage that's been done to the economy will be in some way protected by this. That's one. So that's the technical explanation, but there's also a political explanation. I certainly think this is Treasury's way of sort of saying it needs allies and it wants the IMF as an ally against what we could call a modern monetary theory people who believe that the state should basically issue debt. That the bank, the Reserve Bank, should buy the government's debt, and then, you know, that would be a way of expanding the pool of funds that's available to the government. And there's a lot of fear that that will break the bond market. And this is a way of establishing a set of conditions which prevent the government from moving towards a Zimbabwe-like situation where the bank actually buys the government's debt. At least does that in an unrestricted way. The IMF now have a kind of some measure of leverage over our economy because we owe them money, and that does, I think, give Treasury some. It gives them a group of people they can blame when they get into these arguments with the ANC about where the money should come from.
I think that then, you know, begs that question. I like the fact that you've brought up that example of Zimbabwe, and just now you're talking about just issuing debt as a way to fund activities. Is this not how the U.S. has actually responded to the COVID-19 crisis by simply, you know, printing that $2 trillion or however much amount of money that it has been able? How come a country like South Africa can't be doing the same thing to fund its activities?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I mean, the truth is that money is a product. It's like any other product. It's like things that people care about, like iPhones, and the currency is just like that. So, and it has demand and it has supply, and some people want dollars. Lots of people want dollars. In fact, the whole world seems to want dollars, including the Chinese, everybody else who wants US dollar denominated treasuries. And that's because of the size of the U.S. economy, but it's also because the dollar has a long history, really, of being a very stable investment. That is not true for the South African rand. So, and it's certainly not true for Zimbabwean currency. So economies exist in a world of, it's like a psychological world. You've got to persuade people that there are risks and rewards involved in investing in the things you want to sell, and currencies are exactly the same. The real danger in the South African economy, and I think we're close to this, is wholesale fear around the long-term value of the currency. And you can see this, you know, long-term 30-year bonds in South Africa, the interest rate is now the highest in the world. It's 12.5%. That means that people think that there's real risk in the future that the currency is going to be something the government wants to defend. So you see the point. It's not that, I mean, economies don't function independently. They are all part of the same global economy. And if you start fiddling with if we start fiddling with our economy, we basically increase the tendency of investors to move towards others, so the Swiss franc or the renminbi or the US dollar.
It certainly does sound like the world is finding itself in a bit of a reckoning, in that you know, Treasury and the finance ministry, you know, sort of have their backs up against the wall on this one.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they are. You can see they're prepared. I mean, we're nowhere near the worst off in this because we have capital controls. We've never basically allowed free movement of currency offshore. And I think that's been actually really wise. It's like a firewall that protects us. It slows down the speed at which money can be disinvested from the country and converted into other currencies. But the general momentum, I think, is now towards, away from the rand, away from the South African economy. And it's hard to see how the ANC can fix that from where its policies are at the moment. There is a huge amount of debt globally, and the countries that are in the most trouble are places like Turkey and Argentina, which have had very high value currencies relatively high value currencies, and they borrowed in that, but their currencies are worth a lot, so they were encouraged to borrow in dollars, and now they face a really serious problem of how to service those debts. We're generally speaking much better off, I think, than almost everybody else, but in terms of how much we owe in offshore, how much we have owing in dollars, but we have some other serious, serious problems in our economy, which are worse, much worse here than they are in places like Turkey.
I think as we end off this discussion, Prof, I'm interested to get your thoughts, and I think our listeners would be quite keen to get your insights on 70 billion rand. What does that actually mean? Because when we heard about the approval of the loan last week, it really did sound like a big amount of money. But within the context of a 5 or so trillion rand GDP sort of landscape, what is 70 billion rand?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think the way to think about it is it's lubrication. It's what the banks call liquidity. It's just a way of saying that they can, they don't have to rely as much as they did on the bond markets. They've got some money they can use to just make sure that the bond market never kind of hits a point where no one wants to borrow, no one wants to lend to the government. So the 70 billion rand is not very much given the amount of money that the state has to borrow every year, which is, I would say about 400 billion rand, so five times as much. But 20% is still a lot. So it's one way to think about it is like this is oil in the bond market. It's just a way of making sure the bond market keeps moving because the state can draw on this low interest dollar denominated loan when it really needs it. So, another way to look at it is it's not a lot. The amount of money that they borrowed from the IMF is probably about the same as the SARS, the revenue shortfall because of COVID. We're probably going to be about the same amount, 70 billion rand short, in terms of the amount of money that the state brings in tax. And this just calms people down, especially the people who, what we call, bond vigilantes, the people who want to encourage fear and panic around lending to the South African government. It gives them a kind of weapon that they can use to protect themselves against those people.
So that's been us with Professor Keith Breckenridge, who is the Deputy Director at the Wits Institute for Social and Economic Research, just giving us some insight into what the recently approved IMF loan of $4.3 billion or 70 billion rand actually means for the economy. Just speaking about the fact that as a financing instrument, the IMF loans haven't always been popular with governments around Africa, and the ANC in particular, has tended to see them as something that might reduce the sovereignty of the state. Just talking about the fact that at the end of the day, there are a lot of different financing options that are available to a government that they can actually draw on, but he's just saying the IMF probably gave a good way to provide some liquidity to the market, and he called it oil to actually keep the bond market going. So that's been it. On the other side of this, we continue with our conversation around the IMF loan. Keep it locked. This is The Business Buzz.
The Business Buzz.
In our COVID business watch for today, our producer Slindle Msibi spoke to Kagiso Noke, who is 38 years old and actually works as a CFO at a local municipality in the Northern Cape, as having been in that position for about the last 3 years. And he actually has a passion for events, fashion, traveling and wine, and launched a sparkling wine product during the lockdown called Michelle by KN. It is currently being distributed in Rustenburg, King's and Queen's Lifestyle Lounge, Karabo's in Pokeng, Fontaine, Calder's Bottle Store, Chiller's Lounge in Industrial Site, together with Lakes Inn Liquor Restaurant. So he was answering just a couple of questions talking about what made him launch the product during the lockdown. Did the global pandemic actually have a negative or positive impact on the business? And does he think that his product will eventually thrive in the country, or might he have to change the product until the economy is a bit more stable? And in addition, what advice does he have for entrepreneurs that might have had to put their businesses or business ideas on hold due to COVID-19? Here's what he had to say.
I launched a sparkling wine when alcohol ban was lifted during lockdown. And honestly, I was hoping that since everyone was so thirsty after being denied alcohol over the last few months, they would jump on this opportunity to just grab whatever it is on the market. So I really felt good that this was going to, you know, make it out there and people are going to enjoy it and love it. However, I must say that the response when I launched this product at first was very positive, and people are loving it, people are, you know, appreciating it. People love the taste, the look and everything else. Yes, the lockdown generally affected everyone negatively. However, I'm one person a bit optimistic that if I do something, I only look forward to, you know, the positives to come out of that, regardless of whatever challenges they are. I mean, life is full of challenges, so this one of the obstacles that one really wasn't anticipating to happen, that there'll suddenly be a lockdown and there'll be a global pandemic. And however, I'm still positive to say, look, it is going to make it out there. And yeah, Michelle by KN will be the wine everyone will be enjoying coming towards this festive. For me, the issue of lockdown and global pandemic, for me, it's just something to be short-lived. Not going to be permanent, and everyone is going to come out of it eventually. I believe that this sparkling wine will thrive in the country amid the COVID-19 and the global pandemic. I'm doing this because it's a passion, something that I really feel it's coming from my heart to the world out there. And I believe that I will do whatever it is to make sure that it reaches the targets that I've set in mind for myself, and that people of South Africa are able to enjoy this wine. This one is made of the red Muscadel grapes, which gives the wine the strawberry-like taste. It's only being sold now. You know, I tested people's responses around January this year to see how they're going to react to the product itself, and the feedback was very amazing, as everybody wanted to have to know what is the secret drink that you're saving us, Kagiso, and everyone enjoyed it. To everyone out there that has to put their business on hold because of COVID-19, my advice to you is that use this break to, you know, find out more strategies on how best you can deal with something like this. Go to your risk registers and, you know, develop risk strategies to deal with something like this going forward. You never know what may come again in the future. At least by then you would be prepared, and you know, you may have some mitigating strategies on how best you can deal with this. Do not despair. Just take it as a challenge that is out there, that one cannot do anything without. But you've got a mind. You've got the ability to make this. Yeah, go out there, adjust your risk, develop your strategies, and see what best can come out of this. Don't despair. People can get in touch with me on my cell phone. It's 073-155-2187. I repeat, 073-155-2187. There's also a WhatsApp number that I use. On Facebook, it's Kagiso Noke. There's a website, www.knprojects.co.za. It's KAYNprojects.co.za. Social media pages would be developed and they will be published on this website as soon as they are available. Thank you.
Mob Justice on the Business Buzz.
Welcome back to the Business Buzz, and today we are talking about, you know, what some of these loans mean for the country. We've just given you some background just around it, but right now we want to make it relatable and just talk about, you know, is this something that's actually going to affect you and I, or is this something that is likely going to be more of the government's issue? And to sort of help us unpack it, we are joined by Ken Swettenham, who is our financial expert. You know, anyone who listens to the Business Buzz, we usually hear him around the business wrap, but for today, he's just shedding some insights around this issue. Ken, greetings to you, and I guess as a, you know, as a point of departure, you know, when the country does borrow this money from, you know, some of these large institutions, is this something that ordinarily ends up affecting ordinary people as they go about their business on a day-to-day basis?
Hi, good day to you. Yes, it's a very good question, and the answer is quite simply, if this money got paid into South Africa's bank account tomorrow, you and I would go about our business without even noticing it. It's not really going to affect us on a day-to-day basis, but we have to keep in mind that in the longer term, that this is a loan, it's not a gift. And like any of us who might borrow money to help us get through our month or meet our budget, the government has to do that. The government will have to pay this back. And of course, where does the government get the money from? Well, the money is mainly collected through the source of taxes, and taxes are paid by you and I and companies and from various other sources. So all it's doing is, although it's helping our government out with its cash flow problems, and in the short term, in the long term, it's going to put more pressure on the fiscus as the government plunges itself into deeper debt, and then it's going to put more pressure on the tax collections, which will indeed then affect you and I.
Actually, on that tax collection issue, I'm reflecting back to a conversation that we had. It must have been when the hard lockdown was still in effect, and this was when alcohol was first banned together with cigarettes. And at the time, there were estimates that the government was going to have a shortfall of about 300 billion rand. So I guess within that context of, you know, these taxes, that you're talking about, how can the government actually then recover that money, I guess, in future? Like, are they going to levy us more on fuel? you know, could they increase VAT? I don't know, like, how do they make something like that back? Because this loan doesn't feel like it would be enough.
You're 100% right. The loan is really just a drop in the ocean of what South Africa actually needs. I mean, South Africa's laid out 500 billion rand towards COVID-19 relief projects, and the loan doesn't even cover that. And in fact, the amount of revenue the fiscus has lost through cigarettes and alcohol, because as you know, quite a big portion of the price of cigarettes and alcohol goes towards what we call sin taxes and is paid into the fiscus, and that's not being collected while they've got a ban on the sale of cigarettes and alcohol. And this loan doesn't even cover the losses of the tax collections government would have had. So yes, they obviously at some point cigarettes and alcohol have to come back. Economically, the government cannot afford not to be collecting the taxes on those products. And you mentioned a fuel levy. Yes, that will go up every year, but a fuel levy won't cover this loan. But one of the most effective ways of collecting more tax, unfortunately for all of us, is VAT. And it didn't go up in the last budget. I wouldn't be at all surprised if VAT goes up in the next budget. It's a very efficient way of collecting tax, and everybody pays, whether you're the poorest of the poor or the richest person in South Africa. When we buy goods, we are paying VAT on it. And so that is one way I can see the government collecting more tax from each and every one of us in the future. And that's why I say, you know, tomorrow morning you and I will wake up and go about our business and not notice any difference. But in the longer term, we are certainly going to notice a difference on the amount of money we're paying over in one form of tax or another.
And then I guess the other one, you know, to sort of give us an idea, because At the end of the year, one of the big estimates that's there is that South Africa's debt-to-GDP ratio will be just over 82%. Can you relate to us what that actually means? Is it really that bad? You know, we hear that other countries like the U.S. are heavily indebted, and they seem to be fine. Why do we make such a big ruckus about it?
Well, it's simply because of the ability to pay. The U.S. economy is many times bigger than ours. It's a much more active economy than ours. And, of course, they've got the facility to pay. They have a much bigger tax base to collect from, and then we can go on and on and on. We have a problem, and this is something I think we discussed on the show before, is that we need to drive growth in South Africa, and we need growth-driven projects. But our money that's been collected in taxes is being spent on three things which don't drive growth. And those three things are, of course, loan repayments. And the more money we owe, the more we have to pay. It's government salaries. Our government is the biggest employer in the country. So the wage bill for the government is very, very high. And, of course, it's the social grants. We've got around 16.7 million South Africans collecting one form of social grant or another during the course of the month. And those three items are huge cost to our government. They are funded through taxes, and this is not even taking into account the COVID-19 relief packages that have come in, and it leaves very little for job development and growth and infrastructure development, which is what we really need in South Africa. The bottom line is we just can't really afford to be paying more on debt like some of the bigger economies.
And then I guess related to that, the social spending that's actually been instituted, because South Africa has had a number of different social spending projects, whether it's social grants, whether it's disability, you know, all of that stuff. And now there's this stimulus that's been given the 500 billion, and we don't know when exactly things will return to normal. Would you think social spending will come back to where it was pre-COVID, or would the government sort of have created a culture where it's expected to be spending on social projects at this level?
Oh, goodness, see, that's the question that I wish I could answer. It's trying to look forward into the government crystal ball. In a perfect world, again, the country can't necessarily afford to be spending more on social grants and social spending. They are giving this short-term, and it's meant to only be short-term relief with additional social grants to help the poorest of the poor. And that, again, in my opinion, is unsustainable in the long term. I feel it's got to go back, and it's a difficult one when you start giving somebody an extra 350 rand a month and that person gets used to receiving that money and then you suddenly take it away. I would imagine it will be reduced by not giving increases in social grants at the time of the budget. Each year the social grants go up by 20 or 30 rand, and I would imagine they possibly won't increase the social grants for a couple of years to reel in that extra money rather than just take it away. But that's just my opinion. We've not been given any indication on how the government is going to be dealing with this over the next, say, 6 to 12 months, and hopefully we start coming out of the COVID-19 crisis. So.
Okay. And then I think lastly, you know, because we are focusing a lot on consumers, on ordinary folk going about their lives, one of the things that's been happening during, you know, these lockdowns, I'm quite keen to hear what type of data points you've been tracking over this time, because at least in the start of the lockdown, it was hard trying to get, you know, the traditional economic data from the traditional sources. Slowly we've started seeing PMI numbers and all of that coming out, and some CPI, but from, you know, over the last couple of weeks, what have you been, you know, paying attention to just to keep a gauge on the economy?
Well, Madiba, we're seeing numbers out of the economy which we've never seen. I've been in the financial services business now for well over 30 years, and we're seeing interest rates at the lowest they've ever been. You mentioned CPI. We've got a very low rate of interest. It's one thing we look at in particular, because obviously that's a lot of people with money in the bank and in fixed interest investments are earning a lot less. And on the flip side, if you do have some debt, you're paying the least amount on your debt that you've ever paid on your debt. But really, we're looking at numbers like what's the GDP growth, or I should say contraction, going to be this year. And we've had quite a big contraction in the second quarter. We're looking like we're going to be down around 10% on the year. This is devastating. In an economy that was barely growing at 0.5% a year prior to COVID-19, to lose 10% in a year, it's going to suggest it's going to take us probably close to 20 years to recover from this. These are things which are frightening, and we've never seen it before in our lifetime, and if ever. So, and it's not only in South Africa. We all think we're alone in this. We're not. This is worldwide. The economies worldwide are suffering. The American economy has contracted by 32% in a quarter, which has had reverberations around the world, including a sudden weakness in our currency again over the last week or two. It's around the world, and it's going to take the world a long, long time to get back to what we used to consider normal. And I think we've got to get used to what is going to be a new normal, a term that is bandied around quite a bit.
So that's been us with our financial expert Ken Swettenham, always good and able to, you know, relate some of the big macroeconomic issues to us, you know, just relating what the 70 billion rand loan actually means for you and I, if at all, and also just talking about some of the ways in which the government could see itself trying to recover that money, because as Ken said, this is not free money. One way or another, it does need to be given back. And at the same time, it's against the backdrop of, you know, expected reduced earnings and recoveries and collections coming in from SARS. So that's what it means for us. We're likely going to be paying for it in terms of our taxes, because the country does need to pay. And we just hope that by the time that such action does happen, that the country will be back to some type of normalcy, and that we'll be actually creating jobs that people can then use to pay some of those taxes, and in turn help the country to get out of its mountain of debt. So that's been it. On the other side of this, we come to the end of the show.
You're tuned in to the Business Buzz. Business Buzz.
And with that, we've come to the end of today's show. Thank you so much to everyone who was listening. Thank you to our guests. Thank you to Prof. Keith for sharing insights around what this loan actually means for South Africa in relation to the IMF, why, you know, some of these countries don't like going to the IMF, and what it means politically. And then to our resident financial expert, Ken Swettenham, for just relating to us what some of these loans actually mean. Going forward, it just seems as if, you know, the 70 billion rand, when you think about it in the context of a 5 or so trillion rand economy, it's not that deep, and it's likely to be an amount of money that the South African government is able to pay on its own without too much trouble. The big issue at the moment is just trying to ascertain how many more of these loans we're going to see, because for those that are following, this is perhaps the third loan that's come from quote-unquote external sources, because we first saw $1 billion coming in from the New Development Bank, otherwise known as the BRICS Bank, and we also saw the African Development Bank coming in with its own chunk of money, and now we have the International Monetary Fund coming in with the biggest loan so far. And the issue is just how much debt can the country take. 70 billion on its own, not that deep, you know, especially considering the fact that SARS collects in the region of 1 to 1.5 trillion rand each year, you know, according to just the normal projections when you think about it from that point of view. But when the debts do pile up, it becomes an issue. Also, when you think about the indebtedness of some of the state-owned enterprises, in particular Eskom with its, you know, over 400 billion rand in debt, it sort of contextualizes what some of these loans actually mean and how much they actually go, how far they could actually go. And the last thing is just trying to make sure that the money gets to where it's meant to go. I think that's been a big rallying cry or call from South Africans, that just trying to make sure that corruption doesn't get in the way, and that if the country is going to borrow money from some of these international organizations, then the least they can do is to just make sure that the money gets to its intended recipients, projects, and you know, other service delivery items. So that's been it. Let us know what you think of some of these issues. Do you think it's a deep issue, the 70 billion rand? If not, what are your reasons? On Facebook, we are Via FM, that's Voice of Vits. You can also find our other Facebook page, that is the Vits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at Via FM, and our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. You can also search for us on iono.fm for our podcasts, and our links are available there. And then all our great content is also available on vits.journalism.co.za/business. So with that, we've reached the end of today's show. Thank you to our amazing team. Our technical producer is Kutwano Serame, together with our executive producer, that is Glory Mabuza. Our producers are Slindile Msibi and Tando Tlimba, together with Simbarashe Honde. Don't miss the Business Bus, same time, same place next week for more insight into the world of business. So don't turn that dial. There's more great content coming up on the VAL FM lineup. And for myself, Mudio Mob, Justice Gabaza, and the rest of the team, it is good afternoon. It is take care.
Mob Justice on the Business Buzz. The Business Buzz Podcast.